Welcome to the Should Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the sports betting network. Coming up on the show, Stormy Bonantoni, ESPN sideline reporter, VSiN Money Moves will join us. We'll go over week zero college football, some NFL, get her thoughts on both college and the NFL. Excited to talk to Stormy, one of my favorite people, not just at VSiN, but just in general. So Stormy will join us in a minute, but college football is here. It is a day away. And it feels like, you know, Thursday was the first night where it felt like it should be starting already. I know I mentioned this. Everything's a week later this year. The NFL season doesn't end until January 10th. That's the regular season. That's week 18. So college kind of takes its cue from the NFL. And everything kind of pushed back a week. And this time last year, we were already underway. You know, everything was a week earlier. So we would have been starting that Labor Day weekend, and Labor Day's a little later too. We would have been starting with those games on Thursday and then on Friday, then the big day on Saturday, and even, you know, one or two on Sunday. But we'll get there, and we start Saturday with a handful of games. Have seen some line movement on these. North Carolina and TCU kick it off in Ireland. That is at noon Eastern. And TCU's up to a 9.5-point favorite, total still 47.5. I wonder if we get to some 10s here. If we do, that probably is the point where, you know, some quote-unquote sharper money, professional money will see the underdog getting to double digits and just take those points. Remember, that has been a spot in these international games in Ireland where you've seen some upsets on Nebraska, Northwestern a couple years ago. It was the Northwestern's only win of the year. They won as like 13-point dogs. Florida State got upset as a big favorite a couple years ago. I think last year was like a 5 or 6 point upset with the Iowa State game. So you've seen some upsets in these games. So it's hard to get last year out of your head, where TCU, I mean, it was basically just like the varsity versus, not even the JV team. It was the varsity versus like the freshman team or the junior high team. After the touchdown and the place is going crazy, the game's in North Carolina, it's 7-0 Tar Heels. And after that, it was just a knife through a hot stick of butter or whatever they're saying. I mean, it was just not competitive. It was 41 points in a row. It was 48-14 TCU. So it's different teams. TCU's got an inexperienced quarterback. So does Carolina. I mean, Belichick didn't forget how to coach, but it's just you wonder here if he's got the horses. And we'll find out Saturday, kind of a glimpse into, you know, this season. Remember, they didn't finish the season terribly. They started to play a little bit better, had a chance to win some games. They fumbled twice late in games where they had a chance to take leads or win. Virginia was one of them and Cal was the other one. So they played a little better late in the year, and Belichick's teams, you know, even in the NFL, had a pattern of being able to improve later in the year. But I can't lay the 9.5, but I still like under 47.5. Inexperienced quarterbacks. Sounds like some shaky weather with some wind, some possible rain. So will be fun to get it going. That's noon Eastern. It's kind of a weird slate because 3 Eastern, you have San Jose State, USC. 3:30 is NC State, Virginia. So you do have two games on at once. And then NC State, Virginia is at least two teams you're familiar with and should be a competitive game. I mentioned the other day, I like NC State plus the 6. That number's come down to 4. A lot of experience at quarterback for NC State. Bailey, who's got 53 career touchdowns, played as a freshman, played as a sophomore. He's back as a junior. I know they lost a lot of other guys, but Virginia lost a lot of production. So I would expect that to be a close game. That total has ticked down, was 53.5 just a day or two ago. We're down to 51.5 there. And I know from years past, another trend, week zero has seen a lot of unders where, yeah, not a lot of continuity on offense. The offense is in rhythm yet. There's obviously no preseason in college. It's week zero, so maybe not the case now, but sometimes there's not as many fans back on campus. You get some emptier buildings, and a lot of that's narrative, but I know week zeros in the past have been more under-friendly than anything. Jacksonville State and North Dakota State, I've seen a lot of people make a case for the dog there, and Jacksonville State getting 7. I think you could have gotten some 7.5s if you had enough outs, but those are mostly gone here. We're mostly 7 and 46.5. Don't have much there. Certainly wouldn't lay it. I mentioned as well that, you know, week one, week zero, if you want to take a shot on the underdog, might as well sprinkle a little money line. Not the worst day to, you know, a little money line round robin where you throw in Jacksonville State and you throw in NC State. And if you feel like North Carolina can have a shot, and you just try to, you know, have a little fun with it. If you don't like anything, it's a way to have some action, some recreation without risking a lot, because the payout is so big on those money line parlays with the underdogs. Little money came in on Sacramento State versus Eastern Michigan. Eastern Michigan now laying 9.5. Again, I don't have a lot on those teams other than Sacramento State is supposed to be really bad, and they join a new conference where they're going to be traveling all over the place. I mean, the miles they travel this year with being in the MAC, which is just perfectly captures how crazy college football is now. That Sacramento State is in the MAC. I mean, that just says it all. But Eastern Michigan, down to 9.5-point favorite. That's still a big number for them to be laying. But obviously, you're getting off that key 10. I'm sure there's still a couple 10s here. So you want to take the dog. You can get the double digits. And that's another candidate where, you know what? You want to have a little action. Who the hell really knows how good Eastern Michigan and Sacramento State going to be? You take the Sacramento State plus 295 money line and you throw it in with something else and, you know, you have a good time with it. Stanford, Hawaii, that line has come down. Stanford only laying 4. Hawaii beating them in a close game last year. I think Stanford's going to bounce back. I think they're going to win, but just worry that it'd be a field goal game. You're laying above the field goal there. I don't have much. And Florida State, I'd expect to pound New Mexico State. They're not going to win that many games, so I'd expect them to kind of, you know, these teams that have a chance to name their score, they usually do it now with just trying to run it up and cover and make the boosters happy and make the alum happy and all that. So Florida State, 31.5-point favorite, 53.5 is the total. And then a good game. So it's a pretty good slate, a pretty balanced slate. I mean, you've got, what, 8 games start at noon, standalone at noon, 2 at 3:30. 1 at 5:30, 1 at 6:30, and this is all Eastern. 1 at 7 Eastern, actually 2 at 7 Eastern, because New Mexico and Florida State are 7 Eastern. Then 10 o'clock Eastern, the nightcap standalone, UNLV Memphis. Big implications for the group of 6. That line has come down. People betting Memphis. So, you know, I just in general have a hard time laying points, you know, this early in the season. So that should be a fun game. We'll see if Memphis is live. I know we had the Bear on Sunday, and he thought that he actually liked the UNLV side, which is kind of contrarian to what I've heard. And Barry's usually more of an underdog better, but he thinks Memphis lost a lot, and then UNLV has a chance to be pretty good. So maybe there's a little value there on the favorite. I'm sure I'll be betting it because it's the last game, and I just want to have a little action, want to watch it, whether it's live or a total, but nothing I really like. Pre-game here, nothing I really wanted to give out. Let's see, just from a money line underdog, just because I keep mentioning it. If you threw in, let's just say you throw in Memphis, you want Jacksonville State, and you went NC State. And a lot of these books for week 1, they're going to give you a boost. You know, DraftKings does a 50% boost for people that could bet at DraftKings. 21-1, NC State, Jacksonville State, Memphis. And that leaves you, Memphis is the standalone game, the final one, where if you got the first 2 home and Memphis somehow got a lead, you can kind of hedge and figure out a way to profit. You can let it, you know, do something live. You can just let it ride. That's not a terrible one. Memphis, Jacksonville State, NC State, 21-1. If you have a bonus bet, a boost, if you just want a little action, throw a little pizza money on it. It's week 0. So I know people, it's almost like when you look at this slate, it's almost like the first 4 playing when you get the 2 16 seeds versus each other. And we all have to look up and do research and try to figure out who we like. It's like, normally we wouldn't be betting on these teams, but it's the circumstance that kind of gets you interested. It's going to be the only games on. It's back. You kind of want to celebrate. You kind of want to have a little action. So could certainly understand that from a recreational standpoint, wanting to have a little action on these games. But coming up, let's talk to Stormy Bonatomi, ESPN, VEASAN, Money Moves. We'll see what she likes in these games. NFL, plenty to discuss with Stormy. That is next. This is Should Have Bet More Podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More Podcast. You can catch your weekdays 2 to 4 Eastern on Money Moves, but also on ESPN, where she is America's sideline reporter, America's sweetheart. It is Stormy Bonantoni. Stormy, I should say. What's going on? Thanks for coming on. Football is here. Football's in the air. I appreciate you doing this.
Appreciate you. Not quite the All-American girl, you know, not Jenny Taft just yet. Still working my way up through the ranks, but no, appreciate that very beautiful intro. Thank you.
Before we get to some teams that you like and teams you don't like, NFL and college, preseason change your mind on anything? I know these starters don't play a lot. Not too many like major injuries. I guess Atlanta hasn't looked great. I thought maybe Tennessee could be a little bit feisty. Their starters didn't look good the other day. But you tell me, anything, any team you feel differently about now than you did maybe a month ago?
I think you nailed kind of the treetops of what my perspective has been to this point. The Titans were one that my co-host on Money Moves, Jonathan Von Tobel, and I have discussed a lot, like coming out of last year and seeing some of the steps that Cam Ward had made. And we were very pro Cam Ward coming out of college as well, that maybe with the new coaching staff and some of the changes that they've tried to make, that offense would be cleaner and things would look better. And not as optimistic now looking at preseason, but obviously you never want to overreact from the small sample size and limited reps, and it's going to look different on game day than it does in the preseason. And the Falcons were one that I've been out on the Falcons to begin with. I didn't quite understand just the instant belief that things were going to work and change with Tua Tagovailoa leaving Miami. And that's a division that's interesting to me in that I feel like people are finding ways to make arguments for just about every team in the NFC South except the Bucs for some reason, even though they're the favorites and the most talented and have the clearest path and probably should have won the division last year and let it fall to the wayside. So that's at least some of my initial preseason things that have stood out to me, but nothing too crazy and nothing that has really changed my opinion on anybody.
Yeah, and it's gotten so bad with Atlanta where I wonder if Jack Strand, from wherever he's from, Minnesota, Monmouth, or nobody's even heard of the school. I wonder if they actually go to him, probably not to start, but it's gotten to that point where that's at least a conversation. But let's get to see some teams you do like. The Bengals seems to be everyone's team. Yeah, you know, the defense may be finally better. We'll see if we can get a full season out of Burrow, which has not been a given. Give me your take on the Bengals and how you're betting them.
Yeah, that's kind of the crux of the whole thing, right? Is while we can talk about the improvements that they've made on defense, and they have, and we can talk about how high-flying the potential is for this offense, all of that is out the window if Joe Burrow isn't Joe Burrow and he doesn't play as many games as humanly possible. What I have said, and it's not the most scientific approach, but so far in his career, he's been kind of an every other year injury guy. So in theory, this should be the fully healthy year, I would hope. Plus, admittedly, it's a low bar, but he'll be protected by what's certainly the best offensive line he's had in his pro career. Schedule-wise, they've got the third easiest strength of schedule based on opponent win total and last year's opponent win-loss percentage. As far as the division goes, and as good as the Ravens could be, they're a team that's still going through a lot of change with a new offense and a new head coach. I don't have a ton of faith in the Steelers. Like, I don't think they're going to be anything to write home about. And the Browns are just the Browns. So a lot of things, I think, set up potentially for Cincinnati to be much better this year. And so you look at that win total at 10.5, you're getting plus money on the over on that side. I think the division is a really reasonable bet. And I think about them, Will, as sort of a mirror image in a lot of ways about the Dallas Cowboys, because that's a team that I'm pretty high on too, that they have all of this high upside for their offense and what they can potentially do. The defense just has to be literally not the worst in the NFL anymore. And that's what both of those units have been. They've both taken, it seems on paper, gigantic strides in that area. So one would think it should be able to come together. And I'll ask you this. I'm very interested in, you look at some of these quarterbacks, like Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, I'll throw Josh Allen in this as well. All of the conversation and the things that they have been saying this offseason make it feel like if it's not this year, then when, you know, like this has got to be the year. They're never going to be more upset if they don't win a Super Bowl than if this year doesn't work out. And obviously, two, if not all of those guys aren't going to be in that position, but very high expectations again for all three of those QBs.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, I haven't been sold on him, but I'm not sold on anyone in that division. And to me, Baltimore at 11.5, the benefit of the doubt, they continue to get year after year.
Sure.
You know, Lamar is, I mean, it's insulting to say he's a running back because he's not. He's won multiple MVPs, could have won another one. But running's a big part of his game, and it looks like he might have lost a step, you know, in terms of that. And I don't know, like, is that something where he was just banged up last year and it was a one-time thing? Or is he going to be back to being Lamar? But, man, 12 wins in the NFL is a lot. 11.5, I kind of like their under. Anything else you're playing on there? Are you going to take a shot on Burrow MVP if you think they're going to be this good? Or have you looked at the MVP market or anyone you like? I honestly have not found any numbers I like. To me, they're kind of onto it. All the quarterbacks are short. All the prices look about what they're supposed to be. I know Stafford last year wanted a long number, but I feel like they've kind of shrunk all the numbers where, I don't know, I find it hard to find value, but I'm curious what you think.
Not MVP, but I do think if I think that the Bengals are going to dominate that schedule the way they are and potentially put themselves in a good position in the AFC, then the 20-1 on the Super Bowl, I think, is pretty attractive, if anything, just from a bang for your buck standpoint compared to some of the other prices. To go back to your Lamar Jackson point, it's well taken. Obviously, the rushing last year was the lowest of his career, but he actually talked about this week, though, when he was asked about those numbers, and he said it was because of the injuries, pretty much. He's like, you got to remember, I wasn't healthy, so things looked different. I'm going to do whatever it takes to win this year. So maybe that does go back to the guy that was a two-time MVP, and they're going to need him to be that, right? And maybe it does take a third MVP for this team to finally get over the hump. The change that they have is just what concerns me a little bit there. And if he does, at this point in his career. It's crazy to think he's only 30 years old, by the way. Like, he's been in the league forever, and he's only 30.
Right.
But if those injuries do start to pile up and become more recurring, what does that mean for him, and what does that mean for this team? Because they need him.
Yeah, and I'm more of a Lamar fan than I'm not. I think sometimes in the playoff resume hasn't been great. I got to admit, though, he's another guy similar to Burrow. It's always, and sometimes he's hurt. Sometimes, remember those years where he was like sick and would have stomach issues and would like leave games and, you know, randomly in his practice. So it's just like it's always something with Lamar, too. NFC. Look, I think Minnesota is very live in the NFC North. You could probably make a case for any of the four teams. Ironically, maybe the Bears would be the one that I would buy the least, even though they're defending champ. But you like the Lions. The schedule's a little bit easier compared to these other teams. Believe it or not, as good as they were, and I think they were third in DVOA. They have a fourth-place schedule because they somehow came in last. But what is your optimism here for Detroit?
I think that's a big piece of it, right? They go from really challenging schedule to a last-place schedule. It's the easiest in the league in terms of opponent win total, sixth easiest in terms of opponent win percentage from last year. And last year, too, there are a couple things here, but last year was a season of change, right? With like both coordinators move on to head coaching opportunities. They have the most injured defense in the league over the course of the next 2 years. And I know they're still battling some injuries even this preseason, but you would imagine that water should start to find its level a little bit with that. They were also 2-4 in the NFC North. I do not see that happening again. And this is still a team last year that with them finishing last in the division was still 9-8, which was better than the team that won the NFC South. So given what they have coming back, the potential for upside offensively that you're going to have with Jared Goff, with Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams, Jahmyr Gibbs, obviously, who's one of your favorites for offensive player of the year. I think that there is so much reason for upside given the talent and the schedule. So yeah, the over 10.5 wins, I think, is really reasonable. Plus 180 to win the division. I like that as well. The Vikings are a team I agree with you have a lot of upside, but still a lot of question marks for me. So that is the way that I ultimately played it.
Who's going to be the worst team in the league?
Miami.
Not crazy. I know.
You
have questions, as everyone does. Do you think Cleveland could be in that mix?
I think so. I think Miami, like, from a betting standpoint, there's nothing on Miami that I want to bet one way or the other, with the win total as low as it is, with as ugly as I expect it. With Cleveland, I think things are going to be a lot uglier than people, at least on the surface, might think. That win total in the 5.5, 6.5 range, depending on where you look. I played the alt under 6.5. It was juiced at -160. And I know that's not a fun thing to have to lay and sit on for 7 months, but to give yourself at least a little bit of that wiggle room for a team that I think is right in that, you know, 5-6 win range area. And all of this, as sad as it is, comes down to the thought that I have no clue what they're doing at quarterback. It's honestly embarrassing at this point that you keep trying to trot out Deshaun Watson and make it work. At 4 years in Cleveland, what has he shown you? One good half of football. Like, it's honestly mind-boggling to me. He's 9-10 in his 19 starts, hasn't played more than 7 games in any season due to either suspension or injuries. So doing the math, he's made about $10 million per game to be a 19 touchdown, 12 pick, 11 fumble quarterback. Like, what are we doing? And I understand he's got a record contract and you're trying to get something out of it to get some positive value maybe to start the season. But you know he's not the future of your organization either. And if that's the guy you're still going with, what does that then tell me about the way you view the rest of this quarterback room? So even though this is a team that, you tell me if you agree too, with all of the changes that they've made elsewhere, has a ton of potential for upside in the future and in the coming couple years, the most important position is just such a crapshoot, awful. I have no interest in backing this team. There are a number of really bad teams that they play on their schedule, which I think could get them to the 5 or that 6th win, but I do not see a 7th at all. Like, I know that the NFL can be weird, and I think that weird game could be what could get them a 6. I do not see them going beyond that.
To your point about the NFL being weird, wouldn't it be funny, because we all kind of have the same take about the Browns and Watson, what a disaster. week one against Jacksonville, would you be surprised you turn on your TV and, oh, wow, the Browns are up, 14-0. They got a pick six.
Kill me.
And something happened. I don't like laying points in week one. And I actually like their 2 through 53. I think that roster, it looks like they might have hit on the receivers with Boston and Concepcion, the two rookies from Washington and from A&M. Judkins not a bad back. Fanning the tight end. You start to look and say, man, if they can get the quarterback, which is a big if, these teams look for years, for decades for the quarterback, and they always play some pretty good defense. So I actually don't mind the roster. It's just that quarterback, it's like a car without a steering wheel.
That's why I say I like the trajectory, but fail this year, dude. Fail. Get Arch Manning. Get one of these highly touted quarterbacks, because this class that's supposed to come out next year is supposed to be the best that we've seen in years. So
yeah.
I don't know. I know that when we're all thinking the same, we're not thinking that type of mindset, sure. But this is a Browns team I think is dead in the water when you don't have any solution at the most important position.
Have you looked at week one yet? Anything you like week one?
Not particularly. I'm just trying to figure out from a survivor standpoint what to do so that I'm not out week one. That's the real priority here.
Are you going to go chalk? Are you going to be a little clever? I mean, we know the two big ones, the Chargers over the Cardinals, and then the Jags 7.5-point favorites over Cleveland. Are you going to go? You get like 100 entries because, I mean, you're
oh,
just,
please.
What? How many entries
oh,
are you
please.
Getting,
We're signing up this weekend, actually. My father and I are going to do one entry together. Okay. JVT and myself for Money Moves are going to do one entry, and then I'm going to do one on my own that I can't blame anybody else for our decisions on. So I'll have three, but I truly don't know, because week one is so hard every single week.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, how many years have we seen the Bengals be a huge favorite and get upset and embarrassed? And it's just, you really, really never know. And it's crazy, too, because you put in all this work in the offseason and you build such a concrete cement version of what you think a team is going to be. And then inevitably, they're not that week one. And then you throw out the whole offseason handicap. And then week two, they turn into the team that you thought they were. So it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's the NFL. There's, the games aren't that long. There's only a handful of possessions, 7 or 8 possessions. The ball's not round, so weird, weird things happen. Anything else on NFL awards and any other thoughts?
One thing I would say is I was just looking, and it was honestly in part of the VSiN NFL futures draft that we did recently that got me thinking about a few other things. I was looking at just the number for Josh Allen's passing yards, for Trevor Lawrence's passing yards, or for to be the passing leader this year. Obviously, the players that are at the top and like the Dak Prescotts of the world, they're there for a reason and I think are worthwhile. But Trevor Lawrence at 20-1 in that market and his passing yards over, I thought was pretty intriguing if he can carry over specifically what we saw the back half of last season, right? Like something clicked. They won 8 of their last 9 games. They take the Bills to the brink in the wild card. He was averaging like 270 pass yards per game over that stretch at the end, which when I did the math would pace you out to around like almost 4,500 passing yards for the year. So things like that, if he stays healthy, the connection with Jacoby Myers continues, if Brian Thomas can be healthy, yeah, there's a lot of ifs, but the bang for your buck, I think, with a guy like Trevor Lawrence is pretty nice.
College, our buddy Jeff Schwartz, who I don't know if you saw this, got a little reply on Twitter from Sean Payton, because Jeff hosted First Things First. It's something about Bo Nix doesn't throw deep. I think Sean Payton says you can tell who watches film or who does their homework and who doesn't.
Oh,
something
taking
like that.
Shots.
Yeah,
Jeff
yeah.
taking shots.
But Jeff is an Oregon an Oregon alum. You think this is the team? This is the year? I can't disagree. They had a quarterback who might have gone number 2 overall last year. The whole defensive line is back. I don't disagree with the pick. I just have a hard time with the way they've exited the playoffs the last few years. A couple years ago against Washington, had a chance to make the playoffs. Big favorites, got smoked. Indiana and Ohio State absolutely buried them in rematches a couple years. But you like them, and I don't blame you.
Yeah, I mean, I was on the sideline of that Rose Bowl against Ohio State. It was not good. Thankfully, I was covering Ohio State for that game, so I got the positive, like, happy people for that game. Poor Holly Rowe on the other side having to deal with a pissed off Dan Lanning was not ideal. I understand that, but I also look at each of the last 2 years, and they've taken that next necessary step of you're getting into the playoff, you're in the quarterfinal, then you're in the semifinal, right? Like you've taken the steps. Now, ideally, this year is the national championship, and hopefully I mean, if history follows suit, then they'd get blown out in the natty. But I don't see that happening, right? I really do think this is a buy-on team. This is the year. They, you know, win the Big Ten last year, first round bye. It, to me, it's just, it's not a matter of if, but when they're going to put it all together. I think Dan Lanning is too good a coach. The team they have put together this year is just too good a team. I know the schedule is difficult, but they do avoid Indiana altogether, who appeared to be their kryptonite last season. The road trips to Ohio State, USC, that's going to be tough. They do get to take welcome Michigan and Washington at home. Going through that, my gut says they don't lose more than one of those games. Oregon has lost a combined 5 games in the last 3 years. They are a model of consistency. We had Matt Fortuna, who covers Notre Dame, on the program pretty recently talking about Dante Moore. I asked him about Heisman. He said he prefers Moore to CJ Carr when it comes to that, with the nails completion percentage. He can get the ball downfield. This wide receiver group, too, should be better than last year after they dealt with some injuries. He's got a lot of experience. The one thing outside of what you referenced in the way that their season has ended that people haven't liked about this team is the coordinator changes. And obviously, you lose Tosh Lupoi, who's a new head coach at Cal. Will Stein's a head coach at Kentucky. But do we not remember a few years ago when it was Kenny Dillingham who had to get replaced as Oregon's offensive coordinator? And everyone's like, oh, what are we going to get with Will Stein? How's this going to look? I think it turned out pretty damn well. And they elected to go internal with that hire. It's a guy Dante Moore trusts. It's a guy Dan Lanning trusts. And you know Dan Lanning's going to be running things on the other side of the ball. So I don't have a problem with it at all. And I'm very, very optimistic about this team to win the national championship. And another bet that I made, I put that in our VSiN College Football Betting Guide, was for them just to make the Big Ten title game. You're still getting even money on that. And I think that is an absolutely worthwhile wager to make.
What's the worst beating you've had to... you know, interview a coach while he's had, like you mentioned, Holly Rowe had Lanning, and that was like 40 to nothing, yeah. Maybe until the last play of the half. And I think Oregon, you know, went for it, got a touchdown on the final play or something. Maybe it would have been 40-6 or 40-7. I think they went for 2. What's like the worst where, man, I got to talk to this guy. He's losing 50-something-0. Can you think of one?
Oh, man. Honestly, when they're down like that, we usually will just scrap it. Okay. A lot of those third quarter interviews that we might arrange, we're just like, oh, you know, maybe we don't need to do this one. But I honestly think back to a game I did. This was years and years ago when I wasn't even on national games. It was an ESPN3 broadcast, and it was Marshall's head coach at the time, who was already pretty like short. And he's one of those guys that's like, the longer your question, the shorter my answer type of thing. And I asked him a question, and it was basically just like, are you freaking kidding me right now? Look, we have done nothing. And he just exploded, and I was very scared.
You ever think to ask, hey, are you going to bother coming out for the second half?
Oh, this is a funny one. Maybe I shouldn't say who the coach is. Yeah, I probably shouldn't say who the coach is. But JVT gives me grief for this one all the time. There was a coach that I did one of those off-camera interviews with before you come out for the second half, and they were down pretty bad. And he said, I just asked him something about the adjustments, and he said, it's going to be the best effing comeback you've ever seen. And they proceeded to get blown out by 30.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was a toughie. That was a toughie as well.
Do you ever... No, I probably shouldn't ask this, but is it...
You can ask. I might not answer, but you can ask.
Do you ever hear anything from a coach and the better in you comes out and say, oh, man, this guy's confident they're going to come back. I got to go bet him, something like that. It doesn't have to be this scenario, but you know, you're around these teams. This guy's hurt, or we had a great week of practice, bad week of practice. Ew. The quarterback's girlfriend dumped him, whatever the case is.
Sure. I mean, obviously, that's not information that I can ever use.
Right.
But it is funny because my mind certainly operates that way, where I might learn a piece of confidential information and then you look and see what the spread is and you're like, oh, that's not right. That's off.
Does it work out usually? Because I found, look, you're closer to it than me, but you get information. Oh, this team, you know, they got strapped. They're sick. They're laying 17. They go out, they win by 100. Or, their flight was late. And sometimes it's inside information. It's, I don't know, 50-50 at best.
I got to pull up the ASU football schedule from last year really quickly. Okay. Because there was one of those moments where, and again, like, I respect my job and I have my journalist hat on. And so when I learn confidential information in my coaches and players meetings, it's confidential information. But it was when Sam Levitt got hurt last year, I had intel that he had a Liz Frank injury. from a very reputable source that that's what it was. Before we went in, before they went into that game, it had to have been against Texas Tech. And I was like, oh yeah, he's not playing. This number's off. Da, da, da. They go and upset Texas Tech with Levitt playing the whole game. And I'm just like, what is happening right now? And then obviously he gets done for the rest of the season, like soon after that with the injury and everything. But in my head, I was like, oh, Liz Frank, he's done. He's not playing. And then there you go. Also, I get lost in the sauce sometimes. And I think we talked about this on the Megapod with Gil once.
And Todd.
Yeah, and always Todd. We love Todd. I am so gullible in those meetings. I'm the worst person to talk about from a betting perspective for my own games because I just believe everything that everybody's telling me. Like, why would this coach lie to me? Why would this, you know? And so I just get lost in, you know, a certain position group that they might tell me about or what have you, or their belief in their quarterback and their depth in the running back room or whatever it is. And then inevitably it's lies.
And Todd, I know there's some little beef between you two because you're part of the championship team. The guest was the champion. You were part of the guest crew. The guest had the best record, but Todd saying that doesn't count. He had the best record among Gil and I, so he thinks he's the champion. So hopefully you two can iron that out at some point.
Can we not call it a wash? Can we not both be winners?
No, that's not fun.
I'll give it to Todd. He's consistent.
Don't do that. We're gonna edit this part out.
Listen. I can't just parachute in and claim victory.
That's
part
of the championship. You're on the team that won. You're a part of the team that won.
Is that good or like?
Yeah.
Actually, if I'm Todd, well, so whose record overall was better, or was it a tie?
The guest had a better. So there's four categories. There's me. There's Gil. There's Todd. And then the fourth person is the guest record. The guest record combined gets read every week. So the guest is like it's one aggregate person, one composite person. Or
sure. I'm just guessing what the percentage. Better or worse was Todd.
I'm not sure. We'll have to go back and look. I'm sure he'll be back on this year and we can rehash it again.
Because if that's the case, then I would say Todd, that's you don't want to claim victory that's not yours, right? If the guest record overall was better than your record, you don't want to be like UCF however many years ago claiming a national championship that you didn't play in, that kind of thing. You know, I just, Todd, if you're listening, I just don't want that for you, buddy. I just don't want that for you.
Well said. What, anything like week zero?
A few things. I feel like I am with you and I'm with the masses on the under in the TCU North Carolina game. I am very intrigued to see how that actually plays out in terms of how good or bad UNC actually is. And we were talking about it on the show earlier. I still can't get it out of my brain. The opening drive last year and Gio Lopez takes some 80 something yards for a scoring drive. And you're like, maybe we were wrong all offseason thinking about this roster. And then TCU just scores 41 straight. And you're like, okay, maybe we were right after all. But this, I mean, they have a lot of changeover again this year. I do think that maybe we're underrating what Bill Belichick can do defensively. And obviously, Stephen Belichick, his son, who's a defensive coordinator, isn't going to be there because he's still on medical leave. But Bill really runs the ship anyways. So I think maybe they can keep it a little bit closer than this line move would indicate, that we're all the way out to 9.5. That gets to double digits. I think that you're going to see a lot of buyback on the Tar Heels at that point. Personally, that's just my thought. I also lean, it's a big underdog week for my opinions, at least. I lean Memphis against UNLV. I lean Hawaii against Stanford. Although those line moves, it's like you missed the boat a little bit, specifically Hawaii, right? Like you were getting 6 and now it's down to, I think, 4, closer to that opening 3.5. But I think Hawaii can win that game still. I'm not fully confident in the rebuild at Stanford already having taken hold and all of this stuff. I know everybody's glowing about how it's coach luck, basically, that's out there with Tavita Pritchard and all of this stuff. But I don't know if I'm buying it yet. I feel like Hawaii is a little bit farther along, even without their star wide receiver. I trust Micah Alejado and everything that Timmy Chang has put together there. What else from week zero? Oh, I think 10 is maybe a little bit too many points for Sacramento State against Eastern Michigan. In terms of these FCS programs that are making the jump to FBS, obviously North Dakota State is leaps and bounds better, and like the way that they're going to come across at this level, it's going to be better than what we're going to see from Sacramento State. But Eastern Michigan, this is still a 5.5 win total team. I get that they've got a good quarterback, but the rest of the team around them, not so much. So I think maybe getting double digits with Sacramento State could be an intriguing look as well.
Yeah, and as I'm looking, the 10 seem to be gobbled up in some places down to 9.5 in a bunch of places, which makes sense. 10's a lot. 10's a little much.
It's a lot. And I'm also trying to figure out what I want to do with NC State. I'm a big CJ Bailey person.
Me too.
Have you pulled the trigger on that or anything for week zero?
A little. I wanted to do more on NC State. Now it's 4. Now you're dealing with some dead numbers, but when you're a point and a half, 2 points late to the party.
Yeah, it stinks.
It's tough, but I just think that'll be a close game. Virginia played a lot of close games last year. Bailey's really good. To me, it's more of a field goal game. So I still like NC State.
I'm with you.
All right, Stormy, this was great. This was long overdue. We got to do this more often. I appreciate it. Let everyone know where we can find you.
Yes, I am all for it. Tune in to Money Moves on VSiN, 11 to 1 Pacific, 2 to 4 Eastern every weekday during the NFL season. Once we get going for week one, JVT and I will also be hosting a 1-hour NFL pregame show leading up to the early morning kickoffs. And then we'll be live for 3 more hours during the initial games as well. And then on ESPN, each and every weekend, Saturday, call-in games with Lewis Riddick and Bob Wischusen. Game 1, week 1, coming up, ECU at Alabama. So make sure you tune in 9 a.m. Pacific on ABC that morning.
All right. Rate, review, subscribe. That will do it. We'll be back Monday. Enjoy the college football. See you then.